A little bit after 12 o'clock, you're tuned to KZSU Stanford, and it's time once again for another exciting edition of the Lunch Special.
Thank you.
And welcome to another edition of the Lunch Special here on KZSU. Heard every Monday from noon to one. A little classical flute for your listening pleasure. And today, returning guest, I want to say returning champion, but this ain't no game show. Local resident James Fadiman, author, and today we're going to be talking about the co-founder, one of the co-founders of the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, an accredited university right here in Palo Alto, right, James?
That's exactly right.
Great to have you back. Thanks so much for coming. I know you got to be way too busy to be spending time with us too much, but we're honored. And last time you were here, we were helping you promote your book event at Kepler's for your latest book, The Psychedelic Explorer's Guide. How did that event go?
Well, Kepler's could barely put another chair in, and I'm sure that I know several people who are listening, were listening then, showed up, and we really had a good time.
That's great. I'm really sorry I couldn't make it, but I heard from some other folks that that did, and they said it was an amazing event. And Kepler's ran out of books, too, huh?
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
The only time you'd say that. James Fadiman, let's go over this. First of all, the music today, some classical, and I think there's going to be some world music, too. Who was that, and why'd you pick it?
Well, I picked it because transpersonal psychology, unlike most psychologies, is not especially American. It is a world psychology, and it comes, a huge amount of it comes out of the world's spiritual traditions.
And I guess classical music goes along with that, huh?
Well, classical music is one of the ways in which people can communicate without language, and also it's designed to alter consciousness, and these are the kinds of areas that transpersonal psychology is especially interested in.
So classical music was designed to alter consciousness? I'd never heard that before.
Well, go back a little step to the earliest European classical music, which is Gregorian chant, mm-hmm. and it comes out of an entirely spiritual tradition, and its purpose was to entrance you.
Right. I see. Yeah. When you look at it like that, I guess it does. It definitely fits for sure. Let's talk a little bit about your involvement in the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. This is a university that you co-founded with a partner.
Robert Frazier.
About how many years ago? Back in the 70s?
It was 35 years ago.
Uh-huh.
We were... And it's actually not a university. It's a freestanding graduate school, which is we offer only graduate degrees. And it started when Bob and I were actually working on a textbook. And when you're working on a textbook, you'd almost rather do anything else. And so we were imagining what it would have been like had we had a first-class full education. And he and I included in our schools... Reed and Harvard and Stanford. So we came from kind of AAA rated schools.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we were feeling that a lot had been missing from our education. So we imagined what a full curriculum would be that would take care of mind, body, spirit, and intellect and be of use. And we imagined that such a school could exist, and we basically put out a little newsletter to a couple of hundred people saying this is our vision of a complete education. And much to our amazement, our response was from a number of places around the country, where's the school? And at the same time, Bob's position at Santa Cruz, he was not given tenure, because he was doing much too much interesting things. And so there were people wanting to go to school, and we had envisioned it, and there we were. So we said, okay, let's form a school. And only our incredible ignorance at everything that was necessary to do that allowed us to succeed. So within 6 months, we were accepting our first group of about 18 students who came from all around the country. The campus was the downstairs of a home in Woodside, which included a classroom, an office, and a hot tub. And that's how we started, and now we have a lovely campus in Palo Alto in the middle of the industrial park. We have a batch of degree programs. We have students who've come from Japan and from Europe and from South America and from all over the U.S. And our students regularly pass the state licensing exams for clinical psychology at about the same rate as Stanford and Santa Clara. So we're simply, in many ways, another version of what psychology could be. And we think we are a little more inclusive because we're very concerned with physical health and with spiritual issues, which psychology historically has kind of snuck away from.
Hmm. James Fadiman, the guest for the hour, one of the co-founders of the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology right here in Palo Alto, getting ready to start a new school year.
New school year is gearing up. We have a lot of students coming from a lot of places and a number of students who are finishing their dissertations, a number of students who are in clinical internships all around the county, and a number who will be taking their licensing exams probably by Christmas.
What's a typical class size for the Institute?
Between 15 and 25. My classes tend to be on the small side because mine are not required, but the largest class is rarely over 25.
And like you said, you have students from all over the world.
That's what's exciting, is that we jokingly say that we are incredibly well-known worldwide, which we are. We're moderately well-known in the United States. We're kind of known in California, and Palo Alto, most people don't know we exist.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hadn't heard of it until I met you. The Institute of Transpersonal Psychology of Palo Alto. Well, let's play some more music for the folks. And I know the producer, Blue, we want to thank her so much because she's been doing so much great work behind the scenes. She's pulled out some music today, and we're just going to surprise the audience and us. music's called Gamelan, and the CD is Gamelan. No, Gamelan Sekar Jaya from right here in the Bay Area. That was the name of the group. And that was a track off their CD entitled Waya Girl Swara. And we're here today with the co-founder, one of the co-founders of the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, Palo Alto now, James Fadiman. James, why was Gamelan music picked for part of this?
Because one of the strengths of transpersonal psychology is that we are very interested in what the spiritual traditions from around the world have discovered over the millennia about how to live a better and healthier life. And one of the things that impresses everyone who goes to Bali is how art and music is integrated into daily life so that it is a normal behavior to be an artist in Bali of one sort or another, just the way it is a normal to have a 9-to-5 job here. Hmm. So we're seeing a whole culture that has a very different psychological point of view about what's healthy. And those are the kinds of things that we incorporate as much as we can into our overall teaching.
And I wanted to get to that too, just for the layman or myself. What is transpersonal psychology?
The word breaks down into transpersonal, meaning through or beyond the personality. And it's the assumption that is found again in every major spiritual tradition and every indigenous tradition that we are connected in some way to more than just ourselves. And that we, in another way of looking at it, are more than just the personality that is speaking to you. And Alan Watts says it very nicely, is that the body is the box that the personality is in, but the self, usually spelled with a capital S, is just a larger view of things. It's kind of the way the ecologists don't talk about an individual species, they only talk about a habitat. Because it's the way all the species interact. And so we see human beings as part of habitat, and that individual human beings are more than simply their own personal point of view.
So along that line, does psychology, transpersonal psychology, deal with the afterlife?
What we deal with is people's reports, people's experiences, and people's theories or propositions about the afterlife. And one of the things, there are two ways that people look at the afterlife. One is that your personality, identical the way you are, that Jim Fadiman goes on after Jim Fadiman's body drops away. That's one theory, and it's worldwide it's not very popular. The other theory is that something of Jim Fadiman, some essential part of it, continues on in some way. Just as literally, if you think about it, your body doesn't leave the planet. It simply decomposes, and the parts of it that decompose eventually recompose into something else. So literally, a friend of mine wants to be buried in a shallow grave in the rainforest because he will decompose fastest, he will be eaten fastest, and as he says, it'll be quickest before he is a bird and a flower and a butterfly and a fruit tree. In that way. So that's a notion that something continues, and that we have that report from almost every culture that has ever existed except our own.
Interesting. And along that line, I once saw a documentary where they talked about the air we breathe. And and if you think about it, we're breathing the same air that they were in the 5th or 2nd or 3rd century or even B.C.,
Right. Well, that's the wonderful thing, is the air hasn't gone anywhere.
Right.
And it goes into trees, and it goes into us, and it goes out of us, and it goes out of trees. And there's, obviously, the world is full of recycling.
Totally.
And to think that human beings are somehow not part of it, that's kind of the way plastic doesn't decompose for 10,000 years. So you say, well, it isn't part of the cycle. And you say, it is. It's just a really long cycle. And we're kind of a medium cycle of 70 years, and fruit flies, which live a couple of days, are in a short cycle. But we're all recycling. And one of the things that transpersonal psychology is trying to say is, what does that tell us about how to behave, how to live, how to be of service, how to be happier, how to be more stable? So these are questions that are not theoretical.
What can your graduates do with a degree from the school?
Well, that's been a puzzle for us originally, because when we originally designed it, Bob Frazier and I, what we said is, if we can give people a high-level education, so intellectually the same as one would get in a normal PhD program, at a physical level so that they have a skill, say Aikido or yoga, at the level where one can begin teaching, if they have learned enough emotional reality so that they can function as a psychotherapist, what we felt is somehow there would be, they would be able to get jobs in the culture. And they did for a number of years. And then a number of our students said, couldn't you be a little more precise? Because a lot of us would like to become clinical psychologists, which is a rather specialized view. And so we began to become two tracks, really, clinical psychology and this kind of complete education. And the clinical psychology is also a complete education, but with a lot of courses that simply are necessary for licensing in the state of California. So we now turn out a great many masters and PhDs who become therapists of many different kinds. And as well as our people are working in government, they're working in industry. One of my favorite students ended up running a restaurant in Boca Raton and did his dissertation on transpersonal restaurant management. And after 1 year in this restaurant, he needed to buy a building next door because they were so successful. And within another year, he was teaching management at the local junior college.
Wow.
So our students are very practical. We've had also a number of people who are coming in second and third careers. So we've had a number of attorneys, some of whom return to a different kind of law. Some become mediators. So it's a very wide spectrum of our graduates.
Would you say that graduates of the transpersonal, the Institute for the Transpersonal Psychology, would you say they lean more towards social justice than some?
Well, part of our original vision was that people would take a couple of years of classes and then they would go out and be of service for a year in some way. And our theory was, if you couldn't find some way to be of service, then probably there was not much point in your completing your PhD. So we had a notion that service was one of the things you learned to do, like a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And that still is fundamental in our thinking. But many of our students simply now go all the way through, get their degrees, get jobs, and so forth. And I'm thinking of one of our students a couple of years ago, did a dissertation in a very interesting area, ended up now, after a year or so of being a clinician in Pennsylvania, now just was asked by Yale to come to Yale as a postdoctoral researcher in an area of consciousness that they are beginning to explore. So we're beginning to help other universities expand their psychology department, because most psychology departments, for some reason, don't add spiritual experience into what they're teaching their students about.
Why is that?
Well, transpersonal psychology started as an experimental science on the one hand, and an offshoot of philosophy on the other. And in the university, religious studies tends to be somewhere down the hall from philosophy. So there was simply an academic beginning that didn't include spiritual experience. And then there is a belief system that spiritual experience in many parts of psychology is simply seen as not healthy, even though it's clearly fundamental to most cultures. So it's as if psychology, in defining what it wanted to be, opted more for science and a little less for spirit. And our feeling is that psychology is the study of the whole mind. The psychopathology parts, which are well explored elsewhere, and we do a pretty good job, but also the higher parts of human beings, which is what makes an Einstein an Einstein? What makes a Van Gogh a Van Gogh? What makes a Meister Eckhart a Meister Eckhart? And the leaders, the artists, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, the very successful business people, those are the people that we're equally interested in. And we think fundamentally it's much more important to understand the people who change cultures, who are the great leaders in every field, and what's going on with their minds, than to spend more of your time in psychopathology and the people who should be helped, but they're not where you're going to learn the most. It's as if you want to study athletes. You want to study the best athletes possible. You really don't want to study the people who can't make the team. You may be interested in improving your coaching for them, but you're going to learn a lot more about what goes on that allows you to run a four-minute mile if you study four-minute milers.
James Fadiman is the guest, one of the co-founders of Palo Alto's Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. Have you had any returning war vets enroll in the program?
Not as many as we'd like.
But you have had some.
We've had a couple.
Were they different in any kind of a way? Did they bring a different point of view, a different outlook, a different approach?
Well, they bring a very different outlook, just as the vets from World War II changed American colleges, because suddenly there were hundreds of thousands of serious students.
Yeah.
And I would say that the vets we have don't change us much because we're not a well-known place. We're not a name brand. We tend to attract students who are very committed to the kind of education we provide.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vets were not much different.
But were they different in any kind of a way?
Well, also, we have an older population. Only in the last 10 years have we started to get much younger students, people right out of undergraduate or a year or two out. We didn't want to accept those at first because we were clearly saying this is a more difficult and more intense and more demanding program than you're going to get at a Stanford or a Berkeley. And at first, of course, people said, how can that be, because they're charging much more tuition and they're much more famous. And we said, they don't focus as much, they don't demand as much of your own personal self-exploration. They don't demand you understand yourself as well. Now, I'm a Stanford PhD in psychology, and it was remarkable how much pathology I had and my fellow graduate students had that was totally ignored by the professoriate. And then, having been a professor at Stanford for a while, I understand the difference. But our students simply are under much more pressure to explore themselves as the first object to understand others. And that's tough. And so we simply are more demanding in that way, and our students, therefore, are much more serious.
So how do you get the students to do that? Because that's you can teach transpersonal psychology,
right,
and that's part of it. But to get to the students to reflect and look into themselves, that's something you can't necessarily teach. You can guide them to it.
Well, when I was teaching at Stanford in design engineering, at one point, we were doing admissions, and obviously we're getting a lot of really wonderful, smart people applying, mm-hmm. and one of the faculty said in a meeting, you know, if we can get a good enough entering class, there isn't much we can do to harm them. And what he was really saying is that the students really support each other, and if you get a good enough bunch of students, they will do a lot of this important inner work. And what we're basically saying we're very clear in admissions that transpersonal psychology is not for sissies. and that someone who says, well, my only interest is academic, I only want to be a professor of theoretical psychology or of study variations on the Neo-Freudians or laboratory studies, even in meditation, what we'll say to them is, be careful, because we're not the right school for you, because we want you, the person, to be here, and that you, the person, have not really perhaps looked at every aspect of your life because no one asked you to, and we think it's important. So a number of our students also will elect and are asked to, as part of their clinical training, to have personal psychotherapy as well. So they're sitting on both sides of the therapeutic couch and getting training. So they're getting trained on what it's like to be a client, but also they become real clients. And there's none of us that can't be improved. And so our students, we don't force them in a sense. We try and control them from too much introspection, if anything else.
James Fadiman, the guest for the hour, co-founder of the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology here in Palo Alto. And we're going to play some more music now. And
then we'll...
Just a surprise for all of us. Called Gregorian Chants, and I'm here with James Fadiman, and he's picking the tunes today, and this is all music that goes along with transpersonal psychology. And in case you just tuned in, we've had a full explanation of what transpersonal psychology is and what it does. And for more information on that, you can go on their website, the Institute for Transpersonal Psychology. Their website is very simple, itp.edu. And also more information about James Fadiman at jamesfadiman.com, and that'll give you all the information on his teaching career, James as an author, and probably much, much more than you anticipated on finding out. Now, James, or Jim,
yeah.
Last time you were on, we talked about your new book, The Psychedelic Explorer's Guide, and you had the... is it just the one book event so far at Kepler's?
Well, it's the only other local event, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You got another one coming up. For the for the book, and ironically enough, at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. Go figure that one.
Who would have thought it?
Right. Friday, September 30th, and it's out at East Meadow Circle, Palo Alto. Admission is free, and there's a meet and greet at 5:30 to 6:30, and then 6:30 you'll be speaking, and 7:30 you'll be signing books.
And there's refreshments.
Yeah, and there's refreshments, too. That's and the Psychedelic Explorer's Guide. Let's go over that a little bit, because we were talking off mic, and you said for the, is it the first time or the second time that this semester you'll be teaching psychedelics for the clinician?
The Institute is offering for the second year a course for clinical psychology students on the understanding and use of psychedelics for clinicians, meaning people these days, many of you use psychedelics, many of you smoke marijuana and used other things, and they come in for clinical help, and it's part of their background. It's part of what leads them to get psychological support and help. And what we're sure is that clinicians in the 21st century simply need to know how these things are working, and therefore we're offering a class. Now, it so happens that as far as we can tell, we're the first institution in the country to offer such a class. There seems to be one, I believe at NYU, coming up in this second year. And so we're happy, of course, to be the leader in the country in an area of clinical psychology.
And I'm sure that's your book mentions this, the Psychedelic Explorer's Guide, Safe, Therapeutic, and Sacred Journeys. Really, your book is based on the study of psychedelics for the clinician, right?
Well, it's based on how people are using psychedelics, and 23 million people in the United States have used LSD alone, and that's just one of the major psychedelics, and 600,000 more will be trying it this year. This is U.S. government figures. So my book is really an attempt to say, if you're going to do something that is potentially life-changing and potentially meaningful, it would be better if you did it well, safely, correctly, and with minimal risk, because these are very, very powerful substances. Mm-hmm. And used foolishly, you can hurt yourself.
And lest people don't know, the last time you were on the air, you did explain, as we got into your book, that you had some experience with LSD before you studied it.
I'd say that's a nice way of saying it. Yeah, while psychedelics were legal, I worked with people in Menlo Park, and I worked with the group at Harvard. I was at the very fringes of the Ken Kesey group. And of course, I did get into that because I had some personal experiences that told me that my own worldview up until then simply had been very limited. As if I was from a very small town and didn't know that big cities existed and didn't know that opera houses existed and didn't know that Yosemite existed. And when I discovered all those things, I could not go back to a smaller worldview.
And you told a great story the last time you were on. I'd like you to kind of go back over it a little bit about your first encounter with LSD. It was in Europe, correct?
Oh, yes. I was living in Paris, and I was writing the great American novel, which it turned out not quite to work that well. And my Harvard mentor, who was Richard Alpert, who became later Ram Dass, was coming through Paris with his friend Timothy Leary, and they were joining the very famous author Aldous Huxley on their way to present about psychedelics to an international psychological convention. This was their first kind of coming out in this area. And Dick looked at me and said, "The greatest thing in the world has happened to me, and I want to share it with you." And I looked at him, and he seemed wonderful and radiant and at ease, which was not his usual way. And I said, "Sure." And he reached into his breast pocket and took out a little bottle with some pills in it. And I thought, pills? What on earth is going on? Well, I was given some psilocybin and soon enough discovered that there was a lot more going on in this world than I had ever found.
Now, what is psilocybin? Is that LSD?
Psilocybin has the same effects as LSD. It's actually a very different molecule, and it comes, it's found in nature in the in many varieties of mushrooms. So that the term out there is called magic mushrooms because there are so many species that actually contain psilocin and psilocybin, two chemicals which we've also synthesized.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever take LSD as a recreational drug?
Actually, I've never taken LSD as a recreational drug. I have only taken it as a personal work or spiritual quest. And I'm having actually a private house party in Santa Cruz in a couple of weeks because a friend of mine came up to me and said, I read your book, man. And it never occurred to me there was a use other than recreational. And I thought, wow, we are on different planets. And he said, I got a lot of friends who want to talk to you. So in some remarkable way, I ended up being a very conservative user of psychedelics during the wildest of the 60s. And now in the research renaissance that's coming back, I'm also finding that I'm quite conservative since my interests are wider than medical and include creative problem solving and spiritual experience. And the not spiritual experience, it's too vague, the reconnection of our own individualness with the natural world, which is very interrelated.
Well, with that, let's let that be the setup for the next piece of music today. And then we're going to get back and wind this up with James Fadiman. And we're so happy to have you here for all this great information you're passing on. I do believe that might have been Nora Jones' daddy right there. Was it?
Yep.
That was Nora Jones' daddy, a guy named Ravi Shankar. Probably more people now know more about Nora than they do about Ravi, right? And he's still alive, isn't he?
I think so.
Yeah. James Fadiman picking the tunes today and telling the stories. Not the stories. Get passing information, vital information that we can all use because, James, I can see how this would fit into today's world, as crazy as it is. And you see a lot more than I do because you have a longer view. You remember crazy from 1968.
I have earlier crazies packed away.
You have stuff to compare to. Does transpersonal psychology, has it helped with all this craziness we've had in the world? The world just seems to be going insane now from the local level right on through to the international level. Everything you spoke about today, it feels that this is what the whole world needs to get in touch with itself.
There was a strange moment, which is I was supposed to talk to the entering graduate students on the afternoon of 9/11.
Really? The entering of the institute?
Yep. The kind of entering graduate students, about 50 people.
10 years ago.
And I thought about it, what can I possibly say? And then I realized, and what I said to them, and what I still believe is totally true, it is critically important that this kind of education, which makes use of and cuts across spiritual disciplines, that says, what can we learn from Islam? What can we learn from Judaism? What can we learn from Christianity? And how can we get people to see that if we are all linked together in some way, spiritual, physical, ecological, however you call it, that hurting someone else hurts you. And killing someone else actually does harm you. And we're seeing that with the veterans coming back from Iraq who are so mentally upset, often not because they've been under fire, but because they've killed often innocent people. And so what we're trying to do is present a psychology that says, there is one humanity, and there are lots of different flavors of that, but they're all after the same caring and happiness and support for each other, and also that we're all part of an interlocking biological web, so that if you throw your garbage in the ocean, everyone in the world suffers a little, and you're in the world and suffer a little. I used to rather like air pollution because I'd say the nice thing about air pollution is there are no gated communities. And so in a sense, what we're doing at the transpersonal school and what I'm doing with working with psychedelics is really the same thing, which is getting people to see their own place in the total matrix or habitat that we're all in.
Now, if psychedelics are used in a correct manner in a clinical setting, can they help one discover that?
What people discover in a clinical setting is that their psychological problems, their neuroses, their terrible relationships with parents, their terrible events in childhood, can all be seen as just a part of one part of themselves. So they begin to see that, yes, they have these difficulties, but they don't need to have the same attachment to them. And one of the great spiritual psychological systems, Buddhism, is all about how do you let go of something that prevents your feeling freer, that prevents your feeling more loving. And what we find with psychedelic therapy is that as people find it more comfortable to be more loving of themselves, they find it easier to understand and be compassionate for not only their failings, and that compassion includes forgiveness, but they become more compassionate towards the very people who they have been furious at. And they begin to see that being angry at someone else, usually the other person doesn't know it, and it doesn't affect them at all, but it definitely corrodes your own behavior. And so what we're also seeing on the international scene is the notion that you hate some country is patent absurdity, patent delusion. and that to the extent that we can create healthier human beings, they are less likely to fall into delusions, which will lead them then to hurt other human beings.
And it coming up on the 10th anniversary of September 11th, looking back on the last 10 years as a transpersonal psychologist, I guess you are, right?
Right.
Has America been guilty of getting into a group think along the lines of hate, and has it been destroying the country? Has it hurt the country?
Has it hurt? Well, it's hard to find any single area in the United States where people say it's better now than 10 years ago. When you spend $1 trillion in a war, that's $1 trillion that was not spent at home. And it was also not spent on preserving life. It was not spent on health. It was not spent on children's education. So we decline each year in terms of, with reference to other countries, in terms of how good our health system is. We decline each year on how good our education system is. And at some point, we begin to crumble. And that's a terrible price to pay. So unfortunately, if the goal of certain parts of terrorist organizations, if they were ever that, was to make the United States a less healthy, safe, and powerful country, in a very tragic way, they have succeeded.
You mean the terrorists won?
Not yet. Because we can still turn this all around, just as we did in the 60s, where we said, just because we have been a very racist country for 100 years or for several 100 years doesn't mean we can't have civil rights. Just because women have had a secondary and inferior place for centuries doesn't mean that women have to stay in an inferior place. The ecology movement said, just because we have trashed nature, we've done it out of ignorance and out of greed, we can stop. So the same interests that fueled the 60s are coming back. And I think the underlying fact that so many people in the United States have used psychedelics successfully and safely allows us to move forward more quickly when we begin to turn it around.
James Fadiman, the guest for the hour. You can catch him at jamesfadiman.com. You can also go on the Institute Transpersonal website, itp.edu. Or you can hear this show again at Radio for All, the number 4, radioforall.org. And the book event is coming up on September 30th. Check out jamesfadiman.com for all the information. James, thank you so much. And do stay in touch, and all the best to you and yours.
right. You are listening to KZSU Stanford 90.1. And my name is Holt Sorensen. And we're getting started here on the Clucktronic Groove. So let's go ahead and transition. In theory. Oh, I gotta check something. Something's not right, so we'll let that keep playing just a second.